2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko. And Chet, after 3 weeks in a row of talking Eagles pre-draft, they finally got their guy in franchise quarterback Carson Wentz, and added a few old linemen in the draft as well, and the Phillies are playing fantastic baseball and getting great pitching from the entire staff. And when we talked last week, Chet, the Phillies were 10-10 last Wednesday. They are 16-11 this Wednesday. Nice week.
Yeah, you got it, Bill. The Phillies continue to surprise everyone thanks to a pitching staff that already has a Major League best 6 shutouts. And, yes, the Wentz wagon is filling up fast, even though Sam Bradford doesn't seem to want to be part of the journey.
Well, you know, I'm really excited about tonight's show because we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about a topic that I personally know very little to nothing about, other than through my personal training as a high school coach and dealing with players, and that is sports psychology. And we're going to have Dr. Joel Fish joining us, followed by a recap and evaluation of the Eagles draft selections by our friend Fred Hugo in the second half of our show.
Yeah, you know, some of our listeners, Bill, suggested putting you on the couch for Dr. Fish, but that would be way too challenging, even for him, I think.
Well, you know, Chet, I think probably what we would find out from Dr. Fish is that Bill probably is the one that's in the know, and it's those other guys. You know who they are. You know, they don't usually throw their names around, but it's those other guys that keep talking about how it's not defense that wins championships. And they listen to that morning radio show in town, and they just kind of babble. Those are the guys that Dr. Fish would need to see.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yes, we will. Well, hey, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question back again tonight. We'll be giving away a signed Flyers hockey puck by Flyers Hall of Fame goaltender Bernie Parent, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question right about 7:29 or so. So you might want to write this number down. It's our Shop for Kisses phone line to answer the question. That's 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. Hey, Chet, while we're locating Dr. Fish, let's talk a little bit about those red-hot fighting Phillies.
Yeah, they've been impressive, man. Who would have thunk it? You know, as you said, 16-11. They're tied for the wild card. Actually, they are the second wild card team right now. I mean, I know it's early, but still, they're just confounding the experts. And it's all because of the arms, what they're doing with the pitching. They're still not hitting much, but when you got pitching, you're going to be in almost every game.
Well, Chet, I have to tell you, my friend, that you, not too long ago, I'll say 27 games ago, talked about that bullpen. Your bullpen, we'll call them, and you said that they were awful. I think that's the word you used. And I have to remind you now that they were the players of the week last week for the Fightins.
Well, come on, man. I mean, who are these guys? I mean, we had Genmar Gomez, Hector Neris, and David Hernandez. What had they done before this year to give us any faith that they would be nearly unhittable? I mean, I just don't get it. Everybody was worried, you know, Ken Giles is gone. What are we going to do for the bullpen? And that was a legitimate worry because, as I said, who are these guys? But you look at them now, and they're getting the job done. So I don't know if it's just Bob McClure working some magic or whatever the case may be. They're just impressive. I mean, look at Neris, 3 strikeouts last night. He struck out the side. Gomez hasn't blown a save as yet. they're just doing great, and I hope it keeps up.
Yeah, and you know, Gomez has nine saves already in 16 wins. You just you have to wonder how that's going to go. Nera's picked up another save, or his first save the other night, and they feel like that he's a potential closer himself. So, and then of course Aaron Nola is pitching great. Vince Velasquez pitching great. These are young kids, and I don't know. It was certainly it's way too early after 27 games to get too high hopes, but we'll see how this plays out. And as long as these arms can stay healthy, I think they've got a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, and they're certainly ahead of schedule. We thought maybe they could contend next year if everything broke right, certainly by 2018. But here we are in 2016, and I know it's still, you know, not even a quarter of the season yet, but so far, they're looking like they just might be able to contend this year for a wild card spot. I still don't think it's going to hold up because, you know, as teams get a look at these guys and, you know, see more tape and, you know, watch them go through the league once or twice, they're going to start picking up on the tendencies. They're going to start figuring out, you know, how to make Nola pitch a little differently, get him off his game. You can't expect the bullpen to continue to do what it's doing every single night. There's going to be hiccups along the way, especially if they don't start hitting more. But, hey, let's enjoy the ride as long as we can.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. And, you know, we're going to have games like we had the other night where they get beat 11-1 because they can't hit and the pitcher just doesn't have his night. You know, so there's going to be plenty of them. We saw the Mets do that to them back at Citizens Bank Park not too long ago, but overall they're in the games every night, and you're only getting 3, 4, 5, 6 hits maybe, but they seem to be making them count, and they're winning one run games.
Yeah, and look at Ryan Howard last night with the big home run in his hometown. The guy's only hitting 190 on the season, but he does have 6 home runs in 5 weeks. So, you know, every once in a while, he's going to go deep. He's going to strike out at least once a game. He's got 32 strikeouts in 27 games. But it's still nice to see the big piece contributing once in a while at any rate.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're going to talk. I want to talk as we get going here about Ryan Howard and the whole into the sports psychology and how that all fits together, how you become a leading power hitter to a guy that now struggles to hit 210, can hit a couple long balls that just looks kind of lost at the plate. And, well, let's do that. We've got sports psychologist Dr. Joel Fish with us. Dr. Fish, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Dr. Fish. This is Chet. Thanks very much for coming on the show with us. And by the way, Philly Press Box Radio just celebrated its 2-year anniversary last week, so you are our very first guest of year 3, and we're just delighted to have you.
Hey, I'm honored to be on at this time, and congratulations.
Thanks. I want to mention right up front that you were an honoree last year at the Philadelphia Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and their 19th annual induction ceremony is coming up later this month on the 26th at the Gershman Y, and we'll be talking more about that in just a bit with you. But now, we know you are the director of the Center for Sports Psychology in Philly. You've also worked with the Phillies, Sixers, and Flyers over the years. So what sort of services would you, as a sports psychologist, typically provide these teams as a consultant?
Well, sports psychology has two basic parts to it. The sport part has to do with mental skills for peak performance, positive self-talk, relaxation, concentration, mental preparation, visualization. And I've asked thousands of athletes over the years, what percentage of performance is mental? And athletes are always saying that it's largely mental. So the sport part has to do with those mental skills that help us to perform our best in a consistent way and in pressured situations. The psychology part of sports psychology has to do with anything in an athlete's personal life that can be impacting on their performance. So I've had a chance to talk to athletes over the years about anxiety, stress, relationships, real-world stuff. And so typically with any team, you know, I'll present myself, this is who I am, this is what I do. And then over time, when you develop a relationship with athletes, it could be pro athletes, Olympic athletes, college, high school, I find that if you build a relationship with them, athletes will utilize a service like that, both on the sport end and the psychology end.
Well, Dr. Fish, you mentioned all the way back to high school, and I want to kind of go back and start there and start this thing at the beginning with you. And, you know, I coached high school football and baseball for many years, and I, you know, the whole parenting thing and the parenting involvement, it has evolved so crazily, I think, as the big money and the college scholarships have taken over. How do you handle that from the impact of the parents trying to be too much or too little, usually too much?
Again, as a parent of three kids, there's just something that happens inside a parent, mom or dad, when you see your kid up there with the bases loaded. It's not always just the most rational response. And step one for me in working with parents is just really trying to get them to be honest with what buttons get pushed when you see your kid in a competitive situation. And I think most parents are really, really well-intentioned, but, you know, competition in 2016 is different than it used to be. You've got specialization. You've got, you know, all kinds of kids being scouted at a young age. And I really do believe that parents, if taught how to handle certain situations, do's and don'ts, how to talk to your kid, how to ask them certain types of questions after a game, how to teach them how to relax. And bottom line for that, always is a parent rewarding effort, participation, skill development. There's all kinds of influences out there that we can't control. You know, what ESPN says, what they say in the newspaper. But as a parent, I'm always just trying to get them to understand that you still play the most significant role in your son or daughter's attitudes about winning, losing, success, failure, competition. And I think with some guidance, I think parents, you know, are still very interested in controlling what they can and can teach their kids how to navigate what competition is like today as well as they always have been.
Dr. Fish, it was in 2003 that you wrote the book 101 Ways to Be a Terrific Sports Parent. One of the topics in that book, develop strategies to deal with competitive pressure. And I believe you spoke up at Emerson College about that recently. I got to tell you, I could have used that myself because I was a very average athlete. I played basketball and baseball, and I remember one baseball game as a junior or senior in high school. I was playing shortstop, and I committed three errors in one inning. So the manager moved me to second base, and I had another error the next inning. Just wanted to, you know, crawl into a hole. Talk about cracking under pressure. Now, I know you once said that Donovan McNabb even admitted to you that he gets nervous. What would you have told the 17-year-old me about focusing and, you know, trying not to let my nerves overtake me?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Everybody has these early memories. Half of them are positive and half are not positive. But
yep.
What happens in sports really, I guess, matters for us. And what I would have told you, what I would tell anybody right now is that typically people will come to me and say, for example, I choke or I can't handle pressure. And when you boil it down, most of us can handle pressure, but there are certain specific situations that we are still learning. I take a learning approach, how to handle better. So in your instance, maybe it was learning to let go of that first mistake. Let it go, focus on the moment, next play. Because a lot of times, if you look at baseball, you know, it's or almost any sport, it's the frustration that comes along with making a mistake or not having the ability to let go of a mistake that we take to the next play, and it just compounds itself. So for a baseball player, it might be, okay, what are you going to say? What are you going to do after that first error? For a pitcher, how do you relax yourself when you walk somebody? For the tennis player, okay, we know match point creates a lot of tension. Let's come up with a game plan, things you can say or do in match point situations. So when you're in that situation, you can say, I'm in this situation, I know I'm feeling a little anxious, but I know what to do. And whenever you have a plan, I think you're going to be more in control. Whenever you're more in control, you're going to feel more relaxed and more confident. If you're more confident, your natural talent's going to flow. So that's a long-winded way of saying I think you can break down choking, pressure performance to specific game situations. And I find when you do that, it's much more manageable for athletes than to develop a game plan. And it makes it just much more of a manageable part of the learning curve.
On a related note, I want to talk about clutch performers. We think of guys like Pete Rose, Reggie Jackson, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird. All of them, of course, were terrific athletes, terrific players, but They even managed to step it up another notch in clutch time. How do these guys use their mental toughness to so often take over a game when it matters the most?
Well, you know, that's a terrific question, and I just happen to believe that, you know, there are certain people that, you know, are just born from the first time they pick up a ball. They're just good in pressure situations. You know, Michael Jordan was like that, Magic Johnson, Wayne Gretzky in hockey. If you go back to when they were in youth sport, they just were good. So there are some people that just have a temperament. They have a makeup to be able to embrace pressure. Wow, welcome pressure, opportunity for me. And there's other people, I think, that are in a position where they have to learn how to handle pressure. You talk to a lot of pro athletes, and they say that their ability to stay calm, composed, focused is something they learn. They practice certain mental skills. They watched other people do it. So, you know, to get to the level of the real superstar, though, the Michael Jordans of the world, in my mind, I think you're really talking about a one-in-a-million talent, but also a one-in-a-million personality to be able to do that, too. Some people are more born that way, but I really do believe no matter what your starting point is with that, that you can learn some mental skills to improve.
Dr. Fisher, I wanted to ask you, when we brought you on here in the beginning, we were talking briefly about Ryan Howard, and I want to ask you, how does a guy like him, I looked at your five mental skills that you talk about of competition, confidence, composure, concentration, communication, and cohesion, and how does a guy like Ryan Howard, who's no matter what a great player he was or great hitter he was, his confidence has to be shaken that he can't, you know, he can't hit over 200. What happens to an athlete in that case, and in his case, driven, you know, by injury and probably some age, but mainly by injury?
Well, again, I'm just saying this. I'm speculating, not any, you know, inside information at all. But what I've learned with star athletes is that the same trait that makes them so good, they're competitive. They thrive on challenges. They like to prove people wrong. That's what made Ryan Howard and other players so great. So every trait in psychology, they say, is a package deal. And so sometimes the same trait that makes you so good, you know, competitiveness, has a flip side to it where sometimes you can develop a blind spot to skills deteriorating and just not being able to do certain things. Everybody else may see it, but you don't see it. And eventually you hope that the athlete in the right time and right place gets to a point where they can gracefully transition to different stages of their career. So you have a guy like Julius Erving who went from being Dr. J to being a great player to being a starter to being a role player, if you will. And that takes a tremendous amount of security on the part of the athlete. I think it takes a tremendous perspective. It takes a tremendous vision. And it's rare because what I said earlier, it's more common that the same trait that makes you so good just sticks with you. And so, you know, the Willie Mays of the world just end up perhaps even being a shell of themselves because their competitiveness may blind them to some inevitable peace. I just always wish that the athlete has the opportunity to gracefully transition into different stages of the career. Hopefully, the decisions aren't made by injury or by other things that are out of their control. But the rhythm of the career of an athlete is so different than most of us, meaning that most of us at 33, 34 are just still building a career. We're rising a career. And here you've got guys and women who are already having to deal with being told they're over the hill, or they might be going to old-timers games at 34, 35. So mentally, the challenge that athletes have is very different than most of us. And I think, you know, because athletes are under such a microscope, we see some athletes who transition very well and others who have more difficulty with that.
And, of course, Philadelphia fans aren't always the most compassionate when it comes to this kind of situation. So let's talk about booing. These Philly fans, so passionate, don't hesitate to boo when they're unhappy about someone or something, like Ryan Howard striking out. So let me ask you, do players really care if they're booed, and is it a different situation if it's the hometown fans doing the booing rather than when it happens at a visiting arena or ballpark?
Well, you know, again, there are individual differences. I believe that the guys that can handle that oftentimes are weeded out of the system. I remember I was working with a first-round draft pick, not from Philadelphia, in baseball, who told me he was at the AA level. He said, Joel, you know, there could be 9,999 people cheering me. If there's one person who's booing me, I can't let it go. And he was a number one draft talent, never made it past AA because I think he just didn't have that the mental skills necessary to deal with part of the package of being a pro athlete. You know, there's some other athletes who really use that booing as a fuel. There's some other athletes that block out and have a better ability to really zone in on, see the ball, hit the ball, and, you know, that's why they're able to play in a World Series in front of millions of people and still maintain their composure. But to be able to develop that, I think, is a requirement in order to play at the pro level, especially in Philadelphia. You know, just because you're big and strong physically doesn't mean you're big and strong emotionally, and you need to have a certain threshold of mental skills, I would say, tough skin, thicker skin, to handle, especially what Philadelphia throws at you.
Well, Dr. Fish, I wanted to ask you, a young man that I know, that I've known for a long time, he makes it all the way to the big leagues, okay? And it was a bit of a struggle. He makes it to the big leagues, he gets up there, and he just gets lit up. He now is back in the AA level, and he can't – he's got this mental block, it seems – where he's now afraid to make mistakes. He was afraid to make mistakes when he got to the big leagues because it's such a short leash as a call-up kind of guy. Now he's back in the minor leagues, and he's got this mental block all the way to the point that, you know, committing the cardinal sin of a pitcher is he's looking to see who the hitter is to decide who, you know, how he's going to pitch, and he's afraid of certain hitters. What does a guy do for something like that?
Well, first of all, it's easier said than done, and, you know, I just want to be clear with that because it takes such a tremendous courage to put yourself on the line like that, where you risk feeling shame and embarrassment and humiliation, which is the worst thing an athlete can feel. And in my opinion, you know, sometimes when a guy's been lit up like that, you've got to get them to be honest with themselves. I felt ashamed, embarrassed, humiliated, because unless you label it for what it is, in my experience, it's hard to develop a plan to control that feeling rather than it controlling you. So, again, maybe, just maybe, that pitcher and I would work on really relaxing and really just recognizing the signals his body gives him when his emotions are too high or too low. And what it feels like to be committed to the pitch, the green lights going on, to be aggressive as opposed to tentative. I think we can teach pitchers how to kind of have that self-awareness a little bit more. The second thing we do a lot for pitchers is what we call visualization, where you reconnect them to what it's like to feel confident, proud, aggressive. Today's my day. I feel like a champion. My body's like a well-oiled machine. I'm moving swiftly. I'm thinking clearly. I really believe when you, in your mind's eye, picture what you would like to look, feel like, how you'd like to execute as a pitcher, when you're in that situation, it doesn't cause it to happen, but you can feel like you've been there before. And visualization can be a really good tool to help athletes, I think, be aggressive, confident. If they've had a bad outing or two or three, remember and reconnect to what it's like when they were at the top of their game. So there, too, I think if you give the athlete a plan, I'm feeling this, here's my plan, it increases the chances I'm going to feel, think, and execute the way I want, it increases the chances it's going to happen. And in baseball and other sports, too, momentum is such a funny thing. In the same way momentum can trickle downhill pretty fast, a good pitch, a good out, a good swing, if you're a hitter, a good outcome, you know, can really start that snowball of positive momentum going quickly, and now that pitcher's got a chance.
Hey, the Eagles just drafted Carson Wentz to be their future franchise quarterback. Sam Bradford not happy about that. But from what you've seen of Carson Wentz, does he have what you want to see in terms of confidence and personality to succeed in Philadelphia?
I mean, I haven't seen him. I've just read about him. and I really trust the Eagles brass in terms of assessing that. From a sports psychology view, and I think the Eagles management has admitted this, that the best predictor of behavior is apples to apples when you see somebody perform in an actual high-level competition similar to what they're going to be performing in. And the Senior Bowl is one thing, and having, you know, workouts is another thing, but to have played 23 games at the Division I AA level is really a major, major, major leap compared to playing the Alabamas of the world. And so in my personal experience, there's an exception to every rule. The best way to really assess mental skills, mental toughness, is really to see somebody perform in high-level 10 situations. That's what the interesting thing is going to be about Wentz, because Joe Flacco, you know, came from the same kind of background. He was able to do it. There's other guys that weren't able to do it. You know, I trust that whatever assessment the Eagles did, they came to the conclusion he's going to be one of these guys because he's got the foundation and the mental skills that he can grow in the mental part of the game, handle what Philadelphia off throws at you in the same way that he's going to have to grow in the technical part of his game.
Well, Dr. Fish, Chet mentioned Sam Bradford, and, you know, I'm sure you're well aware of the Bradford camp seems to be falling apart at the seams here a little bit, because all of a sudden we're not the favorite son, or we think we're not the favorite son. Are we talking about psychological issues here, or are we talking about maturity issues here?
You know, I really would be hesitant to speculate, because you don't know what, you know, was said behind closed doors. You don't know what the unwritten agreements were when his contract were signed. You know, I just believe that, you know, especially in football, this is my opinion, and I don't know anything on the inside about Sam Bradford, but because the shelf life of football players is so short because of the risk of injury, that I just believe that most players are going to be looking at their situation through the lens of what gives me the best chance to have a longer career. And, you know, whether that's playing into this or not, you know, I don't know. Whether his injury history in his mind plays into it, I really don't know. But in my mind, the body of work that Sam Bradford showed in terms of facing the cameras every week when he had to this week, demonstrating that he was a really loyal teammate, playing through adversity, you know, just really being a team guy, I don't forget what I saw all season long. So in my mind, you know, I would give, this is me personally, based on a sports psychology perspective, I would give him the benefit of the doubt, because his track record has been really positive in terms of those traits that I just mentioned. Why that's not expressing itself now, you know, I'm not sure.
Hey, Dr. Fish, we want to mention before we let you go, the 2016 Philadelphia Jewish Sports Hall of Fame 19th annual induction ceremony is coming up on May 26th. That's at 5:30 p.m. at the Gershman Y. That's at 401 South Broad Street in Philly. This year's inductees include Lexi Gerson for basketball, Phil Glassman, boxing manager, Amy Gross, squash, Art Jacoby, golf, Glenn Macnow from WIP and elsewhere, sports media, Ira Myers running, Michael Tabas, water skiing, and Mo Tenner for basketball. For ticket information regarding this May 26th induction ceremony and cocktail party, you can check the website phillyjewishsports.org or call 215-900-7999, preferably before May 10th. Now, as I mentioned, you were inducted last year, Dr. Fish. What did that mean to you?
Well, personally and professionally, it was really the highlight of my career. To be inducted amongst people who I watched growing up, from Dolph Shays to Larry Brown, you know, to Dave Zinkoff on the microphone, it's the spectrum. I mean, it's just to be included in a group that I was raised watching and, you know, like any kid, just really putting on a pedestal, even idolizing it, you know, for me, it was a thrill. Personally, coming from a Jewish background, and that's really important to my identity and you know, my lifestyle, that was also really, really important. But, you know, in psychology, in sports psychology, it's not the kind of profession where, you know, you build a house and after 6 months you see the product of your work. I mean, the work that I do is much more subtle. You know, it's harder to define sometimes somebody having success. Statistics are only one barometer for success. So for me to get honored for my body of work, if you will, in a profession where you just don't get that kind of feedback on a day-to-day basis, really was inspiring for me. And I really, really am thrilled to be part of such an elite group and for people who are available to come to the ceremony on May 26th. I really encourage it because it's just something that is very special in terms of the feeling and in terms of the first-class way that it's run. And you get to hear Marco Barkan, too, and he's always great as a master of ceremonies.
Very good. Well, Dr. Fish, before we close up, can you give us tell us a little bit about your book and where listeners could get that, and if there's any website or anything like that that you have that people could read up? This is a really interesting topic to me, and really good stuff.
Well, I appreciate that, and thanks for kind of all the questions you raised, and you got me thinking about really some core sports psychology issues. And the book, in my mind, really was rooted in my being a parent of three kids, and I just really tried to speak from a sports psychology point of view to answer the questions that are most frequently asked by parents, you know, how to help your kid deal with adversity, deal with frustration, what if your younger sibling is more talented than your older sibling, blended family kinds of things, the advantages and disadvantages of specialization. So the book is listed on Amazon. It's really listed on any type of kind of internet outlet. I think it's just as relevant now as it was, you know, 5-10 years ago, because some of the issues that challenge parents are still there, if not even more intense. So for parents that are just looking for a book to give them some kind of guidance or to, you know, really begin a discussion with another parent or significant other about some do's and don'ts and helping their kids at different ages, because I think parenting your kid at 17 is different in sports than 12, 11, 10. I take a lot of pride in the book, and you can get it either on the Amazon or on my website, which is psychologyofsport.com.
Awesome.
Excellent stuff.
Thanks, Dr. Fish.
All right, Dr. Fish. Well, we appreciate it. Maybe we could do this again a little longer and come up with a few more questions for you. Great, great stuff.
Well, I really appreciate it. Hey, there's always something to talk about as it relates to, you know, what makes an athlete tick. So moving forward, if we could do it again, that would be great.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Have a good evening.
Right. All right. All right, Chet. Great, great, great stuff right there.
Yeah, he was good. I enjoyed that.
You bet. All right. Well, hey, it's trivia time. We're running just a few minutes behind, but we're pretty close. Let's get our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. As mentioned, we'll be giving away a signed Flyers hockey puck by Flyers Hall of Fame goaltender Bernie Perrant, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer this trivia question. Here we go. Since the start of the NFL draft in 1936, the Eagles have taken a quarterback in the first round four times. Heisman Trophy winner Davey O'Brien of TCU in 1940, Donovan McNabb of Syracuse in 1999, of course, Carson Wentz of North Dakota State in 2016. I am the fourth one. Can you name me? Yep. Can you name me and tell me what school I came from? There you go. Chet, did you know this one?
I actually did, because I'm old and I remember this guy. So, yes, I knew that one.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Well, let's see if our listeners do. We understand we're having some technical difficulty somewhere, Chet. I don't know what's going on, but we're having a little trouble getting people connected up. But we're going to move on, and let's take our break, and we got Fred coming on. So let's thank our sponsor.
As you said, a lot of people are having trouble connecting. So if you were lucky enough to connect, your chances of winning the prize are a lot better because some of our diehard listeners are unable to get through tonight to listen live. So if you're able to connect, hey, you have a shot at the prize.
Right, and we'll have to figure out why we're not connecting. But,
yeah.
Hey, let's thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, by logging on to the www.shopforkisses.org website. You become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the ones you already shop at. Every purchase made, you get your cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Chet. Well, we've got another special guest tonight, our friend Fred Hugo. Fred has been on the show, been a caller to the show, been a trivia winner on the show in the past. But tonight, he's going to join us as a guest to talk Eagles draft. And I'm going to tell you, Fred has spent as much time as anyone breaking down and down the draft, evaluating the Eagles picks. So, Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me. I'm excited for this. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool for you to ask me to do this.
All right.
All right. Hey, Fred, we're going to talk plenty about Carson Wentz and Sam Bradford in just a bit because we never get tired of talking about that. But let me first ask you about the rest of the Birds draft last Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Now, they took Isaac Seumalo, the offensive lineman from Oregon State, in the third round. Then they had six picks over the final three rounds, rounds 5 through 7. They took, among others, running back Wendell Smallwood of West Virginia, a couple of DBs in Blake Countess of Auburn and Jalen Mills of LSU, plus an offensive tackle from TCU whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce. So what is your impression of those seven picks not named Carson Wentz, Fred?
I was happy with the picks that they made. Just they kind of there's a lot of upside to the picks they made. So it's not necessarily the safe pick in a sense, but I was happy with the picks. I was watching them as they went through and read on different sites and evaluated them, and I was pretty excited, especially the D-backs. I think that the D-backs that they drafted, especially the way the league's going now, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they're only going to be available in sub packages and nickel packages and different things like that. But if you watch the way the league's going, like 65% of the snaps are in those packages. So really you're drafting starters that are going to be able to come in and play in those slots.
Well, Fred, I wanted to ask you, you know, if you look at the pundits out there, and they're all over the map, you know, you have guys that are grading the Eagles down even as low as a D, and you have some at a B, and, of course, you have many that are sitting and waiting on Carson Wentz. But personally, I like these two offensive line picks, and, you know, they may not be ready to start, but I don't think we need them to start. But what's your observation of those two guys?
Well, the first one, the third round pick, Isaac Seumalo, I think he does have an opportunity to start at guard if he's battling against Wuzinski, if that's who ends up being his competition. I really think that he would have a shot. There were some other linemen there that I would rather them have take, like Joe Dahl, which Fran Duffy has brought up on your line multiple times. But this guy is very versatile offensive lineman. He can play center, guard, and tackle. Okay, he at tackle, he did hold his own against DeForest Buckner of Oregon, who's went, in the top, six, seven, I forget where he went. He didn't beat him, but he held his own. You know, there were plays he got killed on. But I think he projects out to be most likely the guard for this year, and then eventually he'll take over for Kelsey.
You mentioned that you liked a couple of the DBs. Jalen Mills, who went in the seventh round, a lot of people thought he was going to be a second or third rounder, but I guess he got in some trouble. He was arrested for punching a woman, which is never a good thing. Now, hopefully that's all in the past and that he'll be an upright citizen. But as far as talent, like I said, a lot of people thought that he would have been taken much, much higher, including Ray Dinger, who thought he was going to go probably in the third round at the latest. So maybe they're getting a nice bargain with a seventh rounder in Jalen Mills.
That was a great bargain there. And Mel Kiper has him going, had him as a second round talent. And
yeah.
to that, to the incident that, that happened, it's kind of a he said, she said type of thing. They lowered it down to a misdemeanor, but as far as his side of the story is, he didn't hit the woman. His girlfriend did, and the woman was just trying to come after him for it. So I don't know why they were in an altercation or the details, but the Eagles obviously did their homework on him, and I would think if he really did was the one that, that actually hit the woman, that they basically the way the league's going and everything that all the players have been getting in trouble for domestic violence, that they would shy away. But he's really quick, and he's aggressive. He was a four-year starter at LSU in the SEC, and he has a slot corner availability. He can also play safety. I like his versatility. Some of the weaknesses, though, he takes bad angles to the ball, and they seem to think that he's going to be – he shies against making tackles, so run tackling may be an issue. But like we were just speaking about earlier, if he's coming in as a nickel sub-package type player, you can bring him up in the slot, leave Malcolm Jenkins back, and then if you think of the other options, what is it, Chris Maragos and Ed Reynolds – I think if this guy could come in and supplant those their spots, then we upgraded the position.
Well, Fred, one of the guys I'm really kind of interested in is this Wendell Smallwood. You know, we know we need a running back. This is another guy that's got, you know, may have some issues that have to be dealt with. But, you know, he rushed for 1,519 yards last year at West Virginia and led the Big 12. He also caught 31 passes. And, you know, I think Doug Peterson's going to run this West Coast offense that we saw with Andy Reid for a long time and made Brian Westbrook into a Pro Bowl star. Does Smallwood have that kind of talent to be able to step in and be that West Coast back that we think we need?
I don't think so. I had the opportunity to watch some film on him and actually and watch how he ran, and he looks successful, but he's more of just a one-cut straight runner right through the hole. So if the hole's not there, he's going to run into it. And with his size and strength, I don't think he's going to have the ability to push the pile. He does have a lot of speed, and where he will be an asset, like you said, is catching the ball out of the backfield. So I see him more as maybe like a third down back, and if he can be a return man as well, That may help. I kind of was liking him to, and I know he's the greatest of all time, so he may not be that well, but I was thinking more of like a Brian Mitchell, that he has a similar size as Brian Mitchell. He can return punts and kicks, and then he's kind of a third down back. So that's what I see with Wendell as far as where he'll go on the team.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad thing. Let's get to the big question, the quarterback situation. I want to know what you think of Carson Wentz and what you think of the whole Sam Bradford deal. Staying out of the voluntary camps, who knows when he's going to show up? Is he going to alienate teammates? How is this all going to play out? I'm just really curious to see what happens with Bradford and what the Eagles do about it. Are they going to trade him or what? What do you think?
Well, the first on Bradford, I'll be on this phone until 9 o'clock tonight if I go on him. But I've always addressed him as soft, and he just gave me the perception that he was weak. Now he recovered from two ACL surgeries, so it takes a lot to do that. But I always got the perception of him, and now with the situation he's in now, where a team goes up and drafts a quarterback, I thought this he would see that and light a fire under Bradford, and he'd be like, all right, I have to show everyone I'm the man, and if I play good enough and I'm an all-pro quarterback, how are they going to get rid of me? Because if he comes out and would play well, say he brings us to an NFC championship loss, he's all-pro, number one, then are the Eagles going to move on from him? Probably not. Carson Wentz will probably sit the bench behind him. But instead, he's cowered and went the total other way, which just kind of shocks me, as weak as I thought he was.
As Derek Gunn put it on Philly Sports Talk yesterday, he's committing professional suicide in his mind by the way he's doing this. I mean, he's alienating teammates probably if he stays out. Plus, you know, what other team is going to want him after he's doing this? So I just don't get it, what he and his agent are doing. But anyway, what do you think about Carson Wentz? Is he going to be the man down the road?
Yeah, I love Carson Wentz. I've loved him for a while. My buddy pointed him out to me back in September, And we started looking at him in North Dakota State, and we were like, all right, this guy will be a perfect fit for Chip's offense because he could run and throw. And at that time, he was third or fourth rounder projected. So then as we're watching the season go on and Chip starts to go down and the quarterback issues, Carson Wentz starts to move up. And around January, he's projected second rounder. And all of a sudden, he's number two in the whole draft. And I really don't think he's that good of a player, but it's more of a supply and demand type of thing where there's a huge need for quarterbacks. So that pushed him and Goff to the top. And then obviously the Eagles and Titans made moves to get them. But everyone, from what I hear and read about Carson Wentz, just says how perfect he is and the intangibles and the upside of a superstar, his poise, his quick release, all that. Everyone talks about that. So I kind of wanted to dig deeper and really see where are the negatives, because it can't just be that he played at North. It can't be just the level of competition. There has to be more to it. So I was watching a couple of the championship games, and as I was breaking it down, it seemed like his timing isn't as on point as everyone seems to say. So some of the deep balls he threw, they were completed and down the field, maybe even for a touchdown. But if it was a pro game, that ball would have been batted away or intercepted. I also noticed that his footwork, he needs work on that because he's just dropping back and he seems not set in his throws. And then the other main thing was he only goes through two progressions, it seems. He drops back, looks if the one's not there, and then if the two's not there, and then he just holds on to the ball. And he seems to take sacks. So I think he has a lot to learn with the NFL speed as well as just adjusting and grooming his game. So it's very important, in my opinion, that Bradford comes back or we ride Chase Daniel for at least a year. I hear a lot of people wanting Carson Wentz to either start or come in the middle of the year, and I just think that would just be a really dumb idea. But I rate that pick as an A, because the Eagles, obviously, we need a franchise quarterback, and if they're right on the pick, you got to do everything you can to get him. And I don't even think what they gave up necessarily is, everyone says mortgaging the future. If you really break it down, they gave up one pick this year in this draft, or two picks this year, and then one pick next year, and one pick the following year. So you're really losing one pick in each year, which, if you think about that, is not that high of a cost for the second pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, Fred, and on that point, I think it's interesting to point out, because I think we all agreed with the Redskins that they mortgaged their entire future a decade's worth for RG3. Due to the injury, after the first year, they never got much out of RG3. But guess who won the NFC East last year? And maybe it wasn't a great division or a great conference, but they won it anyway. And I think with free agency now, it allows you to do a little bit more like the Redskins did, what the Eagles have done, what the Rams have done. You can reach out a little bit and give up some picks. It's probably not the smartest thing to do, but it's not a death wish either, because you can go out and get some guys if you can manage the cap.
I agree. And they were smart enough to draft Kirk Cousins in the draft, too. And everyone's like, why would they draft Cousins? What was it, the third or fourth round? I forget. And look at it now. It was a very smart move there to have a backup plan behind RG3.
That's right. All right, Fred. Well, we certainly appreciate it. Good insight. And like I say, I know you did your homework real well before the draft, and you were excited about the picks. Wanted to get you on here and let you let the listeners know what you thought.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it. I got one thing. I want to try to pronounce this lineman right. It's Hala Puvata. I messed it up. Hala Puvati Vitae, I think. Big V.
You got the Vitae right. I know the Vitae is right.
All right. I was practicing, I choke like McNabb in the Super Bowl.
The good thing is he's not a hockey player, and Jim Jackson and Mike Emmerich don't have to announce it, because that'd be really tough to throw out there in the middle of a hockey game.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Fred. Appreciate it. All right, Chad. Let's get to our we don't have any trivia callers tonight, probably because we're having whatever technical difficulties we're having.
Yeah, we've been sabotaged.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to get this podcast out pretty quick because this has been a really good show, and
people
Dr.
need
Fish
to hear
was
this.
Excellent. Fred was excellent.
Yep.
All right. Wait, let's get our signing updates at Carl's Cards and Collectibles, and Chet, Carl keeps on getting it going here. We've got former Flyers Doug Crossman and Ed the Boxcar Hospodar will be in the store on May the 7th. That's this week. Author Rich Westcott and 1956 NBA champion Ernie Beck will be in the store on May 14th. And last Saturday, as you know, the Villanova seniors Ryan Archidiakono, I'm getting better at that, Kevin Rafferty, Henry Lowe, and Patrick Ferrell were in the store for a fantastic event. Well, check Carl. He doesn't disappoint. He is having the fifth senior in the store. That would be Daniel Achefu on May the 15th. So all you people that are looking to sign, get to all those seniors to sign something, Achefu, May 15th, just added. NHL Hall of Famer Mark Howe and his brother Marty will be in the store on May the 21st, and Brian Dawkins will be in the house on Saturday, June 19th. And also, Chet, Carl's Cards will be the proud sponsor of the May 9th Reading Phillies game. The first 750 fans will receive the 7th edition to their 50 Greatest Players card set, which also includes the Carl's Cards and Collectibles logo, so that's pretty cool. And Chet, tickets are free. So if you've never been to Reading, great place to see a ball game. Tickets are free. Email lauren@carlscards.com or stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give them a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. Chet, Reading Phillies?
Yeah, hey, I have never been to Reading, so, you know, I should try to get to that.
I think you should because it's a really cool place to go, and I know Carl's going to have a big crowd up there. Heck, it's free, Chet. All it costs you is a little bit of gas to drive up to Reading and see some good baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to get there. If not Monday, definitely at some point this season.
All right. Hey, we want to let our listeners know also that we're taking a spring break week off next week, right?
Yeah, where are we going for spring break, Mr. Furman?
Well, I'm going to Florida.
Yeah, always.
I'm hoping it's not raining like it rained this Wednesday of spring break because it's rained cats and dogs all day today.
Oh, I know. I'll be staying here in Central Jersey, actually, just taking the week off and enjoying it. We'll be back in 2 weeks, though, when we have something big planned, so stay tuned.
Sounds great. Okay, we're on schedule. We're actually a minute ahead of schedule. Do you have a parting shot for the week, Mr. Chesko?
I do, and by the way, the Phillies' magic number is 135. That's 135 to clinch a playoff spot. Just throwing that in there.
I will have to make a note of that on May the 4th, it's 135.
Yeah. All right, the parting shot. Curt Schilling was a great pitcher, a borderline Hall of Famer, but he's said and done some stupid things since his playing days ended. His firing by ESPN last month wasn't a shocker after another batch of offensive social media comments. But what ESPN did on Sunday was pretty bad, too. The sports network re-aired its 4 Days in October documentary, which, of course, chronicled the Red Sox comeback from a 3-0 deficit against the Yankees in the 2004 ALCS. But because an afternoon live softball game it carried ran long, ESPN had to edit out a portion of the documentary. So what 10 or 12 minutes did it cut? The part about Game 6, the Curt Schilling bloody sock game. Coincidence? I think not. ESPN's statement, when a live event runs long, it's standard procedure to shorten a taped program that follows, the network said. In this case, we needed to edit out one of the film's 4 segments to account for the extra length of the softball game. It didn't, however, provide any insight into why that particular segment was the one that was chopped, but I think we all know why.
Well, you know, I read that whole story, Chet, and I was speechless, you know, and then of course Schilling, because he's Schilling, he can't leave that alone and has to comment back, and then you know, now the war of words has started. But it was pretty obvious what that was all about. And
absolutely,
pretty shilling is shilling. They know that, but pretty low by ESPN.
Absolutely, I'm glad you agree.
Oh, no doubt. All right, I do not have a parting shot for you this week, Mr. Chesko. So I will leave it to you. Do you have anything else that we're going to discuss on our open mic for just about 2 minutes?
Yeah, by the next time we're on, which is 2 weeks, May 18th, we'll know where the Sixers will be drafting because the draft lottery is May 16th, so a couple of nights before our next show. So we'll see if the Sixers have 3 or 4 first-round picks. We know they have picks in the 20s somewhere from Miami and Oklahoma City, but will the Sixers have the number 1 pick or the number 2 pick perhaps, maybe number 3, and will they get the Lakers pick, which is top 3 protected? So we'll see how it all plays out, and we'll know a lot more about what the Sixers may be thinking about when we're back in a couple of weeks.
All right. Do you have an early prediction of who that pick is going to be?
I don't. Even if they go number 1, are they going to take Simmons or are they going to think about Ingram? I don't know. I just don't know yet. I mean, so much hinges on what's going to happen with Embiid too, but they're not going to know for sure if Embiid is going to be totally healthy and ready to go in October like they're thinking optimistically.
Yeah, and, I really don't think they're going to take Simmons. Quite honestly, I'm not sure he's that good. His stock has dropped in my mind quite a bit. I mean, they didn't make the tournament. Maybe they just weren't good enough, but they didn't. He certainly didn't strap them on his young back and say, let's go, let's get this thing done.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's all going to play out, but I can tell you already that we're going to have Tom Moore back with us. The great writer is going to be on with us in June, the night before the NBA draft. So we'll see what he thinks next month about the whole thing.
I have one other name I want to throw out at you, just kind of get your thought, who was fantastic in the tournament until he ran into the Villanova defensive buzzsaw. But what do you think of Buddy Hield?
The guy can shoot. The guy can light it up for sure. Yeah, Nova stopped him, but he's certainly got talent. He's definitely a top 10 pick. I think a lot of the mock drafts had him going either 4, 5, or 6. So, he's something to consider. The Sixers could always use a guy who can score, that's for sure.
Yeah, 6'4". 6'4".
Yeah.
He can fill it up. So, well, we'll see. It's going to be – this is the time. I think that the Hinkie era is over, thank goodness, and we're going another direction, and hopefully it's time to make that happen.
And the funny thing is, if they do turn it around here and get some great draft picks and start winning, Hinkie is going to get a lot of the credit from a lot of the people who supported him. And, to an extent, he deserves some of it, I guess, for putting him in this position, although we may not have always agreed with his strategy.
Well, and the same can be made over with the Phillies with Ed Wade. Ed Wade got
and
fired.
And Ruben Amaro, yeah.
To win the World Series. And the same with the Houston Astros. Ed Wade got fired down there, and here we are a few years later, and the Houston Astros are a pretty decent team. But he was trading for young kids and putting them in the system, and he never gets any of the credit. But somewhere along the line, he was the GM, leading up to building these teams.
Yeah, and in 2017 or 18, we'll be praising Ruben Amaro for the great job he did last year.
you might be right. He's the one.
Yep.
I guess he's the one that got all these young kids. Whether
he was the one pulling the
trigger or not.
Yep.
All right. So, Chet, we are at the top of the hour. Let's thank our special guest, Dr. Joel Fish, and Fred Hugo for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, May 18th. At 7 p.m. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.